Good morning, everyone. I hope you had an amazing last day at GodoCon, or like yesterday at GodoCon, that you met amazing people, that you got to know new friends, old friends, and of course, like, got together and get to know each other way better than before. A few corporations, maybe, like cooperations, maybe come from that. And we are really happy to have you here and that you join our publishing panel for Godot. Shipping Godot from build to player, or to the player. We have our panelists today at the stage, and I will introduce them in a second. And they are experts in their field in different segments. They have different views of everything and different, like, made different experience. So it's super exciting to see what your views on certain topics are. But I will introduce each and every one with you. Slowly with a question, but first of all, what is the default platform to ship your game in this year?
Well, hi. Should I introduce myself before?
Yes, please.
I'm Pablo Navarro, and I publish games for Nintendo Switch. So that's my answer. Nintendo Switch is my only target.
Hi, I'm... not going to hit the mic. I'm Joseph Hill. I'm with Zagot, and we publish to Apple platforms, so primarily iOS and iPadOS.
I'm Dom. I work for Crazy Games. We're a big web portal, so my answer is you publish to the web.
Yeah, I'm Paul. I'm at Chasing Carrots. I'm a game designer and programmer, and we publish mostly to Steam, PC, and Linux, and two weeks ago we also shipped on PS5 and Xbox.
So we have basically expertise here from the web to mobile to Steam to console, or like Nintendo in this particular case. You had a great talk yesterday about your port, like your Switch game, and like how to basically port a game and release it on Nintendo Switch. So let me ask you, what makes a game console ready?
Well, it has to be really polished, bug-free, really appealing, because consoles are not. Every game should be appealing enough for a commercial release on any platform, but sometimes you will be able to find in another platforms that the games are not not appealing, not. Not ready for a commercial release, but still I'll release. It has to be really optimized on the other side for be able to port and run smoothly, and appealing. I would say appealing.
Isn't every game kind of trying to be appealing? And I mean, we have a lot of indies here in the audience. Is like console even a consideration for an indie team that might be starting out? Like, for a smaller indie team with Godot?
Definitely, because I don't understand Steam. I currently don't understand Steam in the sense of I've tried to sell some games on Steam, and it's a broken system, in my opinion, in the sense it's there's no way to stand out there. On Nintendo Switch, it's also crowded, but you have a few more opportunities there.
I mean, Paul, you just released a game on Steam, and it was pretty successful. Like, what would you say about it?
I mean, we've released a couple of games on Steam, and this was the first really successful one for us. So we had also failures. We've seen this. And we interact much more with Steam, and I wouldn't agree with you. With your, there are certain rules that you can learn about the ecosystem, and there are good reasons why some games stand out on Steam and some don't, and most of it is basically also like talking about appeal of the game. Like I don't think that's a platform independent feature of a game being appealing. It's more player facing attribute of games, the appeal. Sure, there are games that fit better on the Switch, for example. For our game, Halls of Torment would make a great fit on the Switch, I think. Problem is, I've given a talk about performance yesterday, and we didn't get the performance up to a point where it would perform well on Switch. That's why it's not released on Switch. But on other consoles, it does. And on other consoles, like PS5 or Xbox, it's a little bit more difficult for indies, we believe, because the Switch has a little bit more, has a different audience, basically, you know. And yeah, Steam, I would say, if you spend some time on Steam there, you learn certain dynamics, and also you learn through the backend and through how you interact with the store, how Steam promotes games. And actually, Steam has a way of showing good games to the right audience, and they improve on that as well.
But it's often a question like about validating your ideas before you kind of get out with them. And I guess your game took quite a while to get to where it is to be shippable and everything. We have, like, basically, I wouldn't call it opposite, but it's definitely, there is a way to verify ideas to ship fast. And like, why not go to web as like a platform, or mobile in that sense, to be ready faster, to be seeing more players? Because like Steam, you have to have a finished product, or a product that's quite far in development to start to verify it. You can make a whole game for web in that time, I assume.
Yes, we find that a lot of projects that are kind of 3 to 6 months work really well on the web. Shorter time frames are preferable, I think. Just because it costs less, it's less of an investment, you get the feedback much quicker, and then you can kind of update it and build on it. But for the most part, like, shorter projects are really, really good on web. They still perform, they still make money.
I mean, Halls of Torment in that case is a RPG. Like, is there like a yes and no for like web games specifically, where you say like that works, that doesn't work at all?
So it's a different audience, and that can be good and bad. So if you're making games that work really well for the Steam audience, you might find that on the web it doesn't work so well. But equally, games that don't find an audience on Steam can work fantastically on the web. So it's a question of doing your research into the platform and seeing what works and what doesn't. RPGs, the example you gave, RPGs can work well. On web, you want games that keep players coming back and are simple to understand. Those two things kind of in concert make a good web game.
How is it with mobile, Joseph? No. Is it similar to the web, or like, are we talking more like the Steam Nintendo process?
Well, I think there's it's in a spot in between, right? Because you have an approval process, so that means you do need to be at some level, but it's a much lower bar than it is for the console, and you can iterate with updates, closer to what you could on Steam or the web. But I think the mobile has similar challenges to the web when compared to like Steam, for instance, because you do have to think about what your business model is going to be. Like, Steam is kind of just carries forward the pay up front model, and web tends to be a little more like ad supported. Yep. And it seems like with iOS, you have like tons of people, but they're only there to download free stuff. And so you have to think about, well, is it going to be an ad-supported game, or am I going to have a free trial, or how do I get somebody there and keep them there and then actually turn around and make money on it?
Is there any case for like ad-supported games on like console or Switch? Do you know that, if this is a thing?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think I don't think there is any space for ads on consoles. I think most players would not look agreeable on that.
I mean, like it's kind of like more premium driven, definitely, while web and mobile is definitely more on the free-to-play market. But like, I know from like my experience that web and mobile is like where you can get tons of players, like way more than you would get maybe on a Steam Next Fest or something like this, but like where it's really hard to get like players to look at your game to validate ideas. How is it, for example, with like web, how fast can you get out, and like how do you do your idea validation in general? Like how do you do it on Switch, where it's probably the most difficult to do it because you need kind of play sessions, I would assume, to web, where you can just like upload something and see what happens.
Yeah, so on Crazy Games in particular, we do have an approval process as well, so it's not quite open to everybody. You do have to meet a certain level of quality, but we do have basic launch, which is like a soft launch, so that your game is uploaded there. We track it against some metrics. It's shown to a smaller audience, but you still get feedback. You get kind of analytics and stuff. So we track playtime, retention, and conversion. And so you can get a few hundred players, a few thousand players, really quickly through that. So it's very good for idea validation. Yeah.
Pablo, how would you do that? I mean, he talks about a few thousand players. Like, how do you do it with Switch games?
The model is completely the opposite. I mean, you don't have, you always have to get, you have to sell a game directly for a price, not doing ads, not doing. You could try to do a free game with micropayments, but that's not something that an indie will be able to do in a way that it could be an actual business. I have no idea about these other models. I'm really a video game creator, and I don't think that games should be designed around monetization. The game should be designed for what you are really want to do. Luckily, on Switch, this is the only model available for indie developers. You have to put a price to get to the game. You can't have it for free because Nintendo doesn't want you to give away games because they have to sell others. If you give this game for free, they won't buy this another one. I think I don't know about the rest of the things. I got a bit lost about this mention of the process of certification. I can't get into specifics, but on Nintendo, it has to have a quite high quality assurance. Most of the times, you can get away with some things, but usually they require you to give a good build, a good game, and these things.
You could see me dying. I was dying to ask you about certification because it's like that, to me, literally, that's like kind of the heart of the question, right? You know, like with mobile, you can just go straight up, and in Steam, you have the ability to pre-purchase or to get on the wish list, and so like there is a place where you can get users without having a QA team or a full QA cycle. iOS has the same thing with Test Flight, and they also. They also have pre-orders now as well. So, you know, if you're used to getting wish list on Steam, that is, you know, that is a way to pre-promote. I don't know. So that was kind of what I was wanting to ask you. Is like on the console side, like I don't know how you can get to the volume of people you might need to be able to test and validate your gameplay ideas or how your interactions are going to be, or you know, if it's multiplayer, especially like have enough people there on day one that you actually deliver the experience you want to deliver.
I can't tell about multiplayer games because I don't, and I can't do that. It's a whole another level. How we reach people, basically spamming. That's the way we small publishers can try to reach people, trying to request for reviews to the content creators, to blogs, to anyone that will want to help, any kind of help, even if the most little one is really welcomed. And Well, my answer is I don't have an answer. There's no correct. There's no good way to reach people to reach the audience. The best way is to be a good publisher with a lot of resources and a lot of money to invest 10 times the if your game costs 10 million, spend 100 in marketing and it will hopefully sell. But I don't know. In my talk yesterday, I said, and I will repeat it, the best marketing strategies are one of the first is the game developer. Well, having a good game, of course. If you don't have a good game, it will be impossible to market it. The second most important is having a game developer, having the game developers talk about it, creating community, spreading the word by themselves, being them the ones requesting those reviews to the content creators instead of a publisher. And the third one is to build a time machine and going back to 2020. It was a good year for a bad year, of course, for COVID, but the best year for selling games because there was a huge demand back then.
So just to jump in on this topic, that's something that is a really big benefit of the web because so our basic launch is the kind of soft launch shown to a limited audience that's still, you know, a couple of hundred, a couple of thousand players. A full launch is 10 times that. Most games that I've seen have 20 to 50,000 players in the first week just by being on the new games carousel. So that's one of the big benefits of web is you get a lot of players very quickly.
Like, are these storefronts, like in your opinion, comparable to each other? Or like not comparable. Like, does it make sense to launch on like several of platforms at the same time? In your eyes, can you do that even with like a browser game, for example? To like, I know you did porting. What about your games? Are they just on Switch, or do you have a Steam version as well? And what would you consider as like other platforms, like where you can release your game?
The most of my games were released on the Steam first, and usually, if in Steam worked well, the game sold a few thousand copies, it will perform 5 times better on Switch than on Steam. That's my known ratio.
Interesting.
No, but it's not always the same. I mean, I've seen games that were released on Steam and didn't sell a copy. Or sold 50 copies the first day, and on Switch sold 1,000. The reason, well, I thought I was thinking the opposite case, but it's not the opposite. It's more like some games really work very well on Steam, and some games work really well on Nintendo Switch. And I have seen some of them that really failed on Steam, but they were good enough. They were really good, but not understood by the community of Steam, or not being able to reach the audience on Steam. I don't know if I've answered your question, but
yeah, it was just Paul was like definitely having a different experience on that based on your face expression.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't release on a Switch, but we were. When we released our game on Steam and people played it and it blew up, one of the first questions was always when will it arrive at Switch? Because obviously it was tailored to the Steam Deck, and the Switch would be the same form factor, would work pretty well. But we didn't see any way how to reach like the audience of Switch players or anything. We had no experience there, and the only reason why Switch players would play the game on the Switch is because they know it from Steam. That would be our point of view, and we were kind of stumped how to approach this. Obviously that problem solved itself when we kind of put our porting for Switch on ice because of technical issues. But other than that, on the other platforms, they saw our game performing well on Steam and then said, okay, this is a good fit. We want you on our platform. And this is like they do some sort of promotion there also. You get like a certain spot in their front end, because they trust that when the game performed so well with on PC, that console players will also enjoy this. So this is like a little boon that you usually get, but it doesn't guarantee your success on consoles, I think. As I said, consoles is like for us always a second thought, or has been a second thought in previous games, because we primarily develop for PC and then move on. Yeah.
I think to take a different tack to what you're asking, like one thing you have to think about is what your interaction model is. You know, aside from the business model, there's like if you have an RTS game and it's keyboard centric, right? Like that's probably not going to translate well to console or to the phone. But but the flip side of that is if you have if you have like Bluetooth controller support, then getting to the consoles and the desktop, I think like web can support Bluetooth controllers, so you could probably hit all of them if it's a controller centric experience. And then if it's a touch centric experience, then probably console's not great. It's going to be mobile and web can do touch, but yeah.
But would you say that if I develop for mobile, because like it's not too typical, I assume, to like integrate controller support into mobile products if you can make mobile first games?
If you're doing mobile first and that's what you're focused on, you might choose a different interaction model. So it might be touch first. So yeah, a Bluetooth controller could be an afterthought. If you have a, there are definitely a few approaches to get on-screen controls. We have a nice trick I'll show when I show Zygo later, but iOS has built-in on-screen Bluetooth controller emulation, like from the operating system. So if you're using that, then if you have a Bluetooth controller paired, then there's no on-screen controls, it just works. And then if you don't have it paired, then it puts the on-screen controllers up. A fair number of games probably have Bluetooth controller support, and you're maybe just not even aware of it. And like I was saying, the web can do the same thing as well. Like if you have set up input maps in Godot for controllers, then if somebody's playing on the web on their PC and they have a controller paired, it's going to work.
How about the myth, build once, ship it everywhere? Is that a myth, or is it like something you can actually do?
It's something you can do. Different platforms have different challenges. So on the web, the big challenge is build size. So you need to get your build sizes quite small. There are extra steps to do for that. On mobile, it's fairly similar, I'd imagine. On consoles, runtime performance can be a big issue, I think, as you were saying. So there are different challenges everywhere. So yes, technically you can build just straight away for each platform, but in reality, there's probably going to be some platform-specific challenges that you have to face.
I mean, Pablo, it seems like your strategy is like Steam and then console basically afterwards, and Paul did a similar thing. Do you agree? Or?
Well, it's best to release first a game on Steam and then on Nintendo Switch, because you will be able to see if the game... it's really easy to receive feedback from Steam users and then fix those things in the game and release an improved version on Nintendo Switch. I try sometimes I have released a game in both platforms at the same time, and the thing is that it reduces the wave, the release wave, at least for small publishers like me, which... My audience reach is really, really small. I would always do that, going for one platform and then for another. About the things that they talked on Nintendo Switch, you can have actually games that can be played with fingers. It's not an issue to do that, but it's usually preferable to have a specific control that sometimes it's a bit nightmare because you have a lot of options in every button, but it can be done, and I have seen many games that can do that, but can't be done for competitive games or action games. And well, I would never do in mobile a game that uses a touchpad. How do you say? A virtual gamepad, basically. Oh, yes, I can't stand arcade games with that.
I don't want to give an answer to that, which is just that, like, I think that what I've been telling people is that, like, mobile is a very big market, and you should be thinking about it early on. Like, so, you know, my message to people is, like, don't eliminate the thought of going there from your plans. You can make decisions early in the process that will make it easier, or you might find that it's easier to get to mobile than you think it is. You know, I was looking at the Godot surveys of where people plan to go, and mobile's, you know, I think surprisingly low given the amount of revenue that's in the space. So, you know, like, keep your options open at a minimum, and it's not as hard to get there as you might think it is.
Well, looking at the audience, like, in general, the Godot space, there's a lot of smaller indie studios. It's like there are not so many, well, I don't know of any AAA really company that uses Godot besides DICE with the Battlefield extension, maybe for the map making. But where would an indie studio, where would you lead them? Where would you say that's the best platform, and why is it like that? Like, why should they release on a specific platform and focus on that? Or should they go more broad? And yeah, is it your platform? Is it like, what do you think, like, which platform and why?
So I really like web because smaller games work better. So you don't really have to have 50 hours of content that you've spent 5 years making. You can do a really short scope game in 3 months. You can focus on making a fun game, because actually the things that work best on web are generally the games that are the most fun. So you don't really have to kind of invest as much into it. So for a smaller game, for a smaller studio, you can iterate a lot. So they say Rovio made 50 games before Flappy Bird. That model for an indie is very, very good. You learn a lot. You kind of get better at releasing things. Your quality increases over time. You get feedback from players. So I think the kind of shorter games, shorter dev cycles, I think that's really, really powerful for indies.
Yeah, I would say for us, PC is like the best way to release an indie game first and try it out, because it's your development platform by default. Usually you develop on a PC, you develop on your target platform, basically. So I think it's a good start, and it makes perfect sense to start there. Up until today, I didn't consider like web, but it's actually a good point. Dom and I, we had a short chat before this event, and I realized, oh, maybe we should consider, like, if we want to make a little demo or test or see if a game works with players, maybe we should look into web. But as you said, this is also a different audience.
Yep.
So you probably don't hit the same ticks that you would hit when you would release a Steam demo or something like that, or do a playtest with PC players. But for us, I think PC is the way to go, because it's easier, and PC is a more developer friendly thing. Consoles I would say, as you said, they need to be polished, they need to be ready games, they need to pass certification, and so this is like, for me, first polish them on PC when it works there, then move on to, and then look out for other
platforms. Think about these things when you basically created your Steam game, Halls of Torment, that you want to port it to like the console later, and like that you talk about controls, player input, gamepad, and these things. So was it like an afterthought for you, and we like, okay, now we try to move it to the consoles?
When we started the game, we had little time because we were running out of money. So we had to go fast. And we realized, okay, this game is pretty simple, so controller support makes sense because there are a lot of PC players who play on controller. So this kind of was a given. And also, since we have like a small screen, like a small resolution, and everything is visibly very well, it would be a good fit for the Steam Deck. And concurrently, that would also lead us to think, hey, maybe if this blows up, next our consoles. So this is like, this was the chain of thinking for us. We also released on mobile, by the way, but it wasn't us who released it. We just asked a contractor or a publishing studio that they ported the game for us, and we just said, okay, here have our code, and please don't bother with us with this anymore, because we have no idea about the mobile space. The last time when I interacted with the mobile space, it was very difficult and cumbersome, because you need to do constant updates, and you have to maintain the game. You have like this fragmentation of, I don't know if this is still a thing, but it's high maintenance for us, and you need to understand the ecosystem as well. There are different rules, and we didn't want to get bothered with that. So we just asked a publishing mobile publisher if they could make a deal with us. They get 50%, we get 50%, and they can do with it what they want. And we look away like this, you know. So this is like this what that was the mobile venture for us. But yeah, so it's very the quintessence is that there are so different audiences that it's difficult to compare those.
So I think my answer to that would be that we're trying to lower the bar, you know, the barrier to entry, because it is too easy. Like, yes, you're already on the desktop, you're familiar with it, but the desktop market is North America and Europe. And a lot of the rest of the world does not actually have a desktop gaming market, but they have a mobile gaming market.
Yeah.
And I thought of that when you were mentioning, you know, your aversion to on-screen controls. I mean, yeah, I feel the same, but like a lot of people, like that is their gaming device, is a mobile phone and a Bluetooth controller for like a big chunk of the world. And consoles are great, and web is good too. But, you know, it's like, the barrier to entry for mobile is a lot lower than people think. I think, a lot of people kind of, you know, when you're coming from the desktop and you're thinking, well, I can just put shit straight to, you know, to the web, or even to Steam, like you can kind of get your head around what the steps are to do that. But as soon as you start thinking mobile and dealing with their approval process, you might make it bigger in your head than it actually is. And then, I guess, you know, to kind of close that thought out, like, it's not just that there's a big chunk of the world that's not desktop first. It's like, if you look at the breakdown of revenue, mobile is where the money is actually,
yeah, absolutely,
you know, the,
yeah,
biggest chunk,
yeah,
of money is being made. So
that's why we said,
yeah,
okay, let's do this. It's worth doing.
Yeah.
But we don't have the in-house expertise to do this ourselves.
Yeah, but we want to make it easy enough for you.
Yeah. That's great.
Next time you won't have to give up that half. So, yeah.
Okay.
There's actually some questions. Like you asked basically to outsource the mobile version. Did you also change the monetization model? Because we were discussing that before. And is that, like, are you happy with the result? I'm sure you played it and looked at it, and like, what is your kind of impression from it?
I was dreading the idea of trying it out, actually. monetization is like, in the mobile market, monetization needs to be thought into the game design, and we didn't do this. We kind of, yeah, this is contrary to our values. So we just let the publisher do that. They just do, as we said, you have free reign. I know that our art lead tried the game and said, oh my God, they butchered the graphics and so forth. But that was necessary to make it run on the platform, of course. And also the UI looks completely different. I think also that the balancing is different. So because there's a free and a premium version, like this, this dichotomy is there. And we're like, okay, it's just how mobile is, I guess, in the ecosystem. So this is how you make money with mobile games. And we just let them do this. And I kind of, for me, it was like, this is a pure financial decision for us. It's not, my game design is probably a completely different one than the one on the mobile platforms. So this is like a little bit, it's like a prodigal child that you left away.
Right now there's like the possibility with, for example, Xgodot from Joseph works on that, where you can basically like load up your builds and on an iPad already and try it out. Did you do something like this to kind of like see how it would work and like talk about it while you're like,
I think we had the other construction sites we had to tend to. We didn't consider it, I think. Yeah, but this is new information for me. Actually, that this is possible.
Please, Joseph, if you can elaborate about that one.
So Zagot is our port of Godot to the iPad and the iPhone. So you can actually just copy your project files over to your iPad or your iPhone, load the project up, and run it. I mean, you can do the editing there as well. But like from the standpoint of starting with the desktop, it's pretty straightforward. And kind of pre-announcing what I'm announcing at my talk, but what the order doesn't matter. But we do have a Godot extension now in the Asset Store, so that you can just have Zagot push straight to the device. So you don't have to move the project files over, and you can actually remote debug from Godot to iPhone or iPad using Zagot.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you can, and then you can take control of it, and it doesn't have to be the prodigal son. I think I think a lot of people think that, and that's like, I mean, that's a good business for mobile porting houses, and like they can probably make decisions that maximize the revenue. But like if you want to have the experience be as close to the original as possible and you want to own that experience, then you might prefer to do the port yourself and choose a model that is maybe closer to your original vision. So yes, you could maybe do in-app purchases to make a lot of money but not feel great about it, or maybe you just do a time trial or a few levels for free, and then say, okay, well, you got to pay from this point. Like that you might be a lot more comfortable with that. You might not have to change the way the game works as much to move to a model like that.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
I'm sorry that I took it like before you.
I
didn't know about it.
I just had
it
to take a moment to think about like what. But you know, it's public. It's out. It's out. All right. You can pretend like you're surprised if you come to my talk later.
Just real quick, like how long would you say it takes an indie team to make a viable product on like your certain platform, like Steam, web, mobile, like let's say a team of five, which is probably like the typical Godot kind of team size, like four or five people. How much work is it to release a viable product that gets your return of investment, like just an estimate? What ballpark are we talking about?
So I can take Halls of Torment as an example. We started the game with two people actually from the team the first month. Then we had a first playable game, and then we tested it in the office. And one coworker in the studio who wasn't involved in the game played it, and this 1 month prototype, like he stuck to the screen for 3 hours, and we were like, okay, I think we got something there. So let's add graphics. Let's flesh it out. Then we were three people for about another 5 months. And then we had a playable demo already with two levels, with three characters. And the baseline was in place. And then we just published a free demo on Steam and looked what happened without any big marketing stuff or anything. What we did do is like we did send out keys to streamers, because back then survival likes were like the hype, and streamers were playing it a lot, and so we were like right in the middle of this whole wave. Today you would probably not get such a big response than we did. So the wave is over, so you would have to think of something else. But back then it worked. And we realized, okay, the demo is actually catching up. We got like a couple of hundred reviews within the first week. And we said, okay, cool, let's roll with it. Another 3 months. After 3 months, we released it. And then still three people only. We released it in early access, and we got our money back within a couple of weeks of investment. The whole, until that point, I think the budget was about, I don't know, 50K or something like that. And we got 70K back within shortly after the release. And then the streamers kicked in, and then it blew up. So there was a lot of luck involved. This is like, you remember survivorship bias, there are like things that always factors, you know, this, it was a perfect storm, the stars aligned and everything worked out. Today wouldn't work that way, of course. Also, for example, one thing that we were lucky about is that Diablo 4 was announced, and our goal was to release 2 weeks before Diablo 4. Right, we even have had a talk. We were in talk with a potential publisher, and they said to us, "No, don't do this. And your price is too low. And you should sign with us. We bankroll you, and you move the release 6 months later, and you will make much more money with that." And we declined because our mind was set on this planet, and we had no regrets. Right, it worked out. Because the reasoning was that players who looked forward to Diablo 4 would itch for something until the release, and when we came along with a Diablo-like game that is also a survival-like and very short termed, it would like catch players, and that worked out as well. People mentioned Diablo 4 in our reviews, like every 10th review, oh, better than Diablo 4 or stuff, something like that, some ridiculous stuff, yeah.
So how many months then from the beginning to kind of the release, to the full release?
The full release, yeah. It was about a year and a half, more or less, year and a half, yeah.
But with the first validation, basically, after a month internally, yes. And then externally pretty quickly.
Always validate your games, always.
Yeah. So on web, a team of five can probably make a game in a month that brings back the revenue. Obviously, there are challenges with that, but when you've taken a month to make a game, the risk's very low, and you can then do another game the next month, and you start earning money over time, and all of them add together, and you can fund a studio quite happily. So that's the, if you've got a team of a few people working full time, then a month is a perfectly good estimation for making a game that works on the web.
Also pretty interesting for in between projects, kind of like making a web game for once in a while. How's it with mobile?
I don't think I can answer this. I mean, it's how much water is in a bucket. Like, you know, how much, you know, like, what do you want it to be? I think that it is, I think plenty of people do ship a mobile game within a month. Mm-hmm. Probably they're successful money-making ones. You know, when Miguel and I decided that we were going to do Zago, which is an app, so it's a little bit more than a game. Like, he's like, I think we can probably get something out in 3 or 4 months. And that took about a year and a half. So, you know, it's like, you know, but it's, you know, scope creep happens. So, yeah, I wouldn't touch estimating what it takes a team to make a game.
Abdul, you said your games on Switch, they have to be like good games, or how do you call them? Like they have a certain level of quality, like how long to achieve that?
Okay, when I say level of quality, I don't mean a huge game, a big game. I mean something that it's not broken, basically. I mean small indie games, solo developers can actually make a full game for Switch. Don't need to make something extra. A mobile game can be really released on Nintendo Switch with just a few changes, and basically complying with Nintendo's guidelines. But, well, to happen a return of an ROI on a video game made for Nintendo Switch, think about Suika. Suika, this game could be done in two weeks and it sold millions of copies at €3 in Japan and then in the rest of the world. And you could make 1,000 Suikas and not make 1 cent. So I don't have an answer for how much should you do you need to invest or how much time do you need to make a successful game, but because the answer is no. you can do 10 huge games and not get the ROI. And well, I wish I had a good answer for that.
Before we open the questions to the audience, I would be interesting to see like who's actually working on a game right now for Steam or PC in general. Like, could they raise your hands? There's a lot of hands going up. Like, if the camera doesn't see it, who's doing that for web? Oh, there's actually some hands going up. What about mobile? And like same as web about, I would assume, and console. Any console games working on? Okay, there is like a very shy hand coming into the air. I would now open the panel basically for questions from the audience. If anyone wants to know something and ask our panelists something, please raise your hands. And Max comes to you in a second.
Now that we have, thank you very much for your insights, very interesting. Now that we have seen the show of hands and I'm very interested in console, there was only one hand. What do you think is the reason that many of us good old developers don't go console first or don't go to console at all?
I think there's a very high perceived barrier of entry to console. So it can feel like there's just so much you need to do. I need to get in touch with Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony. I think the barrier to entry is quite high there. I think that can probably explain a lot of it.
Follow up on that. Do you think this is a perception issue or is it actually that way?
I think it's a little bit of both. I have released a game on Xbox. It is easier than you think, but it's not easy.
Yeah, I agree on that. Like, we sim shipped on multiple consoles, and it was a rough ride for us because the Godot ecosystem for consoles still has some rough edges, but it turned out well. But it is not like you press a button and then you push it to the console. That's not how it's working because the hardware is obviously different. For example, we have threading in our game, and the threading on the console works differently. Then it crashes because the stack size is wrong, and then stuff like that. You have to take care of that. So there are like small details that still kind of create the technical barrier, but there's also a lot of bureaucracy involved because there is a higher bar for quality. Your game should pass certain tests, and you sometimes also need to adapt certain things. For example, there is like one specific requirement for screen sizes or something like that. There is like a safe area, and your readable, interactable elements shouldn't be inside this safe area of the screen. So what we had to do is like increase our fixed resolution so our UIs fit into that area just for consoles. So this is like one example of many that you look into. So this is not like you just push a button and it's there. And yeah, I guess consoles also live from the big polished AAA games that shine on there and the players are used to finished, polished, perfect products, basically. And indies, they have like most indies, at least the indies I know, they have like this mentality: okay, I make a game, I make it quick, I release it, and then I get feedback from the players. Like they live from the community. So it's a little bit different.
All right, we have time for one more question.
Well, should I answer that too? Because being the one doing suites. I mean, the dev kits are not available for everyone. So you can publish on PC by just paying €99. You can publish on a website, just having a FTP. You can do it on an iPad, buying an iPad, a retail iPad. But for Nintendo, for publishing on consoles, and only consoles, you have, even if we have indie programs, you still have to do a whole process of being accepted or going with a publisher or a publisher. You will probably need a publisher. That will take a huge cut of, because they will have to work a lot of on doing this port, on doing this marketing, doing their services. And that's why it's easier to go with another platforms. But that may be the reason it's sometimes easier to sell on consoles than on other platforms. It's a bit less crowded. It's also crowded, but not that much currently.
All right. Thank you for the interesting panel. We don't have, sadly, not any more time for another question. So in about 7 minutes, we're going to have the next talk from Simone Mendel about art direction, an art direction crash course. So see you there soon. Get some drinks and
thank you very much for the panelists, Paul, Dom, Joseph, and Pablo.
Thanks.